The Armed Forces Radio Service takes pleasure in presenting another in the series of This Is the Story. Great statesman and a great man, Ignaz Jan Paderewski. The familiar Moonlight Sonata may bring memories to many of you listening now. Memories of the piano artistry of Paderewski, who in all his creative efforts visualized a free Poland. His fingers painted the portraits of Polish fields, lonely and desolate. The gay feasts and the dances of Poland. The melancholy of the Polish people. A people praying and hoping for deliverance. His music expressed the rhythm and the heart of a nation. To Poland, and to Paderewski, pianist and patriot.
Friends, this is Ben Grauer speaking. Today we bring you the story of a pianistic genius whose hands were touched by God, whose keyboard was humanity. This is the story of a foreigner who came to our soil with a spirit as American as your own. This is the story of a statesman who brought us music and took for his fee our help to replant a new nation where an old one lay bound in chains. This is the story of Ignaz Jan Paderewski.
I knew him.
Your name, please?
Jan Paderewski.
Oh, then you were...
I was his father.
Tell us about it. Everything.
What is there to tell? My son was born in 1860. He lived, he died. His life was useful, and I was proud of him.
Ah, but there is more, Mr. Paderewski, much more. Your son was no ordinary man. What about his music?
At the age of 3, with no instruction, he improvised at the piano with one finger. At the age of 4, he used all his fingers. The only instructor I could find for him was a violin teacher. I gave my child a book marked Compositions of Ignaz Paderewski, and he quickly filled it with compositions of Ignaz Paderewski.
But he was both a musician and a patriot.
And why not a patriot? Poland was thrice divided, a country of 3 masters, Germany, Russia, and Austria. His grandfather was sent to Siberia because he wished Poland free. I was also in prison for love of my country. Many times my boy celebrated with us the anniversary of the great Polish victory over the Teutonic Order at Grunwald in 1410. Therefore, even before he could read or write, freedom had a deep meaning for him. Of course, my son was a patriot.
I knew him. I was one of his teachers at the conservatory in Warsaw.
Was he a good student?
He was entered without examinations, you know, but he was expelled twice.
What for?
Once for refusing to play with a conservatory orchestra. He said he preferred to study. And the second time, I forget for what.
What did you think of him?
I told him he would never be a pianist. I said he had no hands for piano playing and should study composition. Another teacher wanted to make a violinist out of him. Another a trombone player.
Apparently you were all wrong.
Yes. Yes. I can't understand it. I cannot understand it.
My name's Tretbar.
You knew him too, Mr. Tretbar?
Very well. After the tremendous success of Mr. Paderewski in Paris and his fame in Europe, I was placed in charge of his first tour of America.
When was that, Mr. Tretbaugh?
Latter part of 1891.
How did it work out?
Well, I did a very great injustice to Mr. Paderewski. When he landed, I met him and told him, "Don't expect anything like the success you've had in Europe here. We've heard them all play, and we're not easily pleased in America." I warned him not to look for extraordinary houses or anything the least bit remarkable.
Wasn't a very encouraging greeting, was it?
No. I was sorry afterwards. We'd assigned him to a second-rate hotel and booked a tour with a schedule that would kill any normal man. We discouraged him in every way. Yet his tour was such a tremendous success that this unknown became not only the toast of the musical world, but better known than any American artist. Somehow or other, his personality, his appearance, that shock of reddish hair that framed his head, that imperial goatee, fired the imagination of the American people until his name actually came to mean Poland to the average person. Became synonymous, too, with the word pianist. And finally, believe it or not, found its way into 1,000 unbelievable avenues of American life.
Buy Paderewski candy, a hit in any language. We sell Paderewski soap, the cleansing sensation. Paderewski is the king of pianists, but Johnson's is the emperor of dry goods.
Over here, over here, over here. Take home this remarkable wonder toy to your little boy or girl. All you have to do is wind it. Then watch the toy man in the black frock coat and the white bow tie shake that head of red hair and pound the toy piano.
Thank you, one and all. Father, teacher, manager. You've helped us know the artist and weigh his fame. But all this was but prologue, was it not? Prologue to Paderewski the statesman. How was it that this man, this artist, turned to politics?
I can answer that.
Your name, please?
Madame Paderewska, his wife.
We are honored, Madame Paderewska.
Had you ever heard my husband play?
Yes, madame, but only in the twilight of his career.
You must understand about my husband's music. The chief inspiration of my husband's life was Poland. Music was one way in which he could give expression to his fondness for his, for our country. And not suddenly, but perhaps as a flowering of all that had been planted before, after he had achieved his artistic success, he looked to see how else he could serve Poland.
I understand. When actually did he come to a decision about this?
Well, it was in about 1908, when he had concluded another tour in the United States. One night we were on our way back to New York in his special train. He always traveled in a special train, my husband, so he could practice as we rode along.
Herr Yanka.
Yes, Nuncio, what is it? You look so tired, my love.
I'm not tired, only weary. I've been thinking, Ilyenka.
Yes?
Ilyenka, if I were to ask you, what is more important, the statesman or the artist? How would you answer me?
Why,
I will answer for you. The statesman comes first. The artist follows. For no artist, Ilyenka, however great, can be above his nation or beyond his nation. He is the seed of her seed, a portion of her, blossom of her bearing, fruit of her ripening.
Why are you saying all this, Nuncio? Why do you tell me this?
Because all the while I've been thinking, Ilyenka, that the time has now come for me to cease the role of the artist and to become a servant of Poland.
But, Nuncio...
Believe me, the clouds are already gathering on the horizon. The time has come for me.
But what are you going to do?
When I was a boy of 10, I used to fight the Battle of Grunewald and win again and again that immortal victory for Poland. I used to say to myself then how happy I would be if I could make a tribute to that wonderful success, if I could live long enough and become wealthy enough and strong enough to build a splendid monument to that victory. It never left my heart, that dream.
But seriously, you do not...
Seriously. Through the grace of God, I have lived long enough. I have become wealthy enough, and I am strong enough.
But Nyonshu...
We have only the Carnegie Hall performance remaining. Then, Ilyinka, you and I shall go to Poland. There in Krakow, we shall build the monument of which I've always dreamed. And I shall give it to Poland. So that, now that the war clouds gather, Poland, like myself since the age of 10, will never forget that she was once free.
I was at Krakow when he gave the monument to the Polish people.
Who are you?
What does it matter who I am? I am a Pole. I came there with thousands of other Poles from all over the world. All of us burning with national consciousness, holding tight to old traditions and customs, yet, since the partition of Poland, without freedom.
You saw him then? You heard him talk?
Yes. Standing there alone at the foot of the unveiled monument.
We are in the need of strength, of re-inspiration. Blow after blow has fallen upon our stricken race. Thunderbolt after thunderbolt. Our whole shattered country quivers. We are being taught respect for all that is another's, contempt for all that is our own. We are bidden to love all men, yet hate our own fathers and brothers. Our new teachers are stripping us of the last shred of racial instinct. The holy symbol of our nation is being attacked by croaking ravens who screech, "Away with Poland! Long live humanity!" As if humanity could live by the death of nations.
I am another friend. We were having dinner together when I heard his famous prophecy. He turned to me and said,
"Zygmunt, within 5 years of fratricidal war was soaked with blood of Hohler.
A war?
Believe me. We must prepare, we Poles. For as I breathe, from the burned cities, from the tortured soil, will rise the Polish phoenix."
Came in 4, not 5 years. Only in this respect was Paderewski wrong.
And who would you be, sir?
A Polish leader. That is sufficient. When war broke out, I went with the others to his home in Switzerland to plead our cause.
Be seated, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Be seated. And now, speak. What is it you wish of me?
Your career, maestro. For your country.
Speak clearly, Dmitri.
You alone can accomplish the task we of the committee have selected for you.
All I own, my entire fortune, it is yours. You have but...
No. It is your art we wish, maestro.
My art?
Your art. And through it, the help of the friends you've made in America.
America? But the battle is here.
For you, it is across the sea.
Yes, maestro. There you are known as no other of us is known. There you're respected. There you must go to accomplish 4 things for our cause.
Name them.
You must tell them of our desperate need for food.
Rouse interest in our hopes for the future.
Secure for us the American government's help.
And unify Polish sentiment there, where there are more Poles than any place outside our boundaries.
But America is neutral. It is a delicate situation.
We are aware of that, nevertheless, my...
In the name of Poland, we ask it.
I accept. I shall not play a formal concert again until Poland is free.
I heard him make his first speech in America in 1915, the first of many throughout the country. He spoke for a half hour. I'll never forget the way he began.
I have to speak to you about a
country which is not yours, in a language which is not mine.
Then, following his speech, he played Chopin.
My name is Colonel House.
Oh, yes, Colonel Edward M. House. I remember President Wilson called you his second personality.
I never met again anyone like Ignaz Paderewski.
Tell us about him.
He was brought to me by Robert Woolley, director of the U.S. Mint. He felt that if I could only be convinced of Poland's plight, I in turn would take him to President Wilson.
What happened?
I was living at 115 East 53rd Street, New York City at the time, when Woolley told me his story.
Well, Colonel?
Very well. Tell him I will see him today, this morning. But with one provision.
And what is that, Colonel?
I can promise him nothing. Nothing, do you understand?
Colonel House, I should like to present Mr. Ignaz Paderewski.
I had a lot of the half hour for the interview. The conference was in my library. Paderewski absolutely refused to be seated. He paced back and forth, driving his home, pointed like rapier thrust. I never heard a man so eloquent, so direct, so forceful. It was as if I was a judge and he was a genius at the bar, pleading the most important case of his career. When he came to the point where he asked that our government make Poland the loan of $1 million, I suddenly stopped him. You don't seem to understand, Mr. Paderewski. There is no government of Poland. The United States cannot loan money to a mere committee.
Cannot, Mr. House? The United States can do anything. She promised Cuba she would drive out Spain and set Cuba free. She kept her word. No other country in the world ever did such a thing. She won the Philippines at arms and then paid Spain $20 million for them. No other nation ever did anything like that. She joined other powers.
He piled up argument after argument until not only a half hour had gone by, but an hour and a half, 2 hours. Finally, like a man done, he ceased. He threw himself into a chair and looked at me.
What did you do?
I rose from behind my desk and went to him. I extended my hand as to a soldier. I said with deep feeling, "You have convinced me, Mr. Paderewski. I promise you to help your country all I can."
You will take me to President Wilson?
I will see that you meet the president.
It was at a party at the White House that I first met him in the summer of 1916.
Go on, Mr. President.
Dinner had been over for some time, and we finally joined Mrs. Wilson and the ladies in the drawing room. As I remember it, most of the heads of the foreign nations were there, members of the government and other distinguished citizens. The world situation was such that about us all there was an air of expectancy. It was rather hot and close, and all the windows were open. Gradually, all conversation seemed to stop. Apparently, someone had opened the grand piano, as I suddenly heard a voice by my side whisper.
Do you know he hasn't touched a piano in a private house for over 2 years?
Then I, too, looked in that direction, and I saw him slowly seating himself. A strong-looking man with a crown of reddish silver hair. The silence was, well, almost uncanny. And then he played Chopin. His artistry won from the keyboard the melancholy cascades of the immortal music of his countrymen. It was as if the piano had suddenly become a political instrument, as if the player wished to span the room to where I was sitting, to reveal to me through Chopin's music the longings of the true Polish spirit, to open the door perhaps to a deeper understanding of the Polish cause.
Did he succeed, Mr. President?
When he had finished, I went to him and I thanked him and told him I'd never been moved so much by a national appeal before. Mr. Paderewski, I said, I shall not be forgetful of Poland. I know the terrible conditions, the tragical conditions that exist there, and no one can know them without feeling his heart torn with that knowledge. I shall not be forgetful of Poland, sir.
Thank you, Mr. President.
They became great friends, Wilson and Paderewski. Such friends that throughout the presidential election of 1916, Paderewski actually campaigned for Mr. Wilson among our Polish Americans. And on November 6th, as we awaited the results at the president's home at Shady Law, New Jersey, Paderewski joined us at the chief executive's invitation.
Mr. Ignaz Paderewski.
Oh, ask him to enter, please.
Mr. President.
My dear Paderewski.
I wish you what I wish my own country, Mr. President. A rightful victory.
Thank you. And let me assure you, Mr. Paderewski, that Poland will be resurrected and will exist again.
Mr. President.
For Poland, the miracle of independence will come from the West, as my own victory will come today through a miracle from the West.
What did Wilson mean by that, Mr. House, his victory through a miracle from the West? As I recall, Wilson went to bed that very night believing he was defeated by Charles Evans Hughes.
Yes, but that miracle happened just the same. At 5 o'clock the next morning, that news was proved wrong. The weight of the California vote elected him president for the second time.
And did he keep his word to Paderewski?
In the 13th of his 14 points for peace in Europe. Addressing the Senate in January 1917, he kept faith with Paderewski.
No peace can last, or ought to last, which does not recognize and accept the principle that governments derive all their just powers from the consent of the governed. And no right anywhere exists to hand peoples about from sovereignty to sovereignty as if they were property. I take it for granted that statesmen everywhere are agreed that there should be a united, independent, and autonomous Poland.
I am the Polish General Joseph Haller.
Ah, yes, General Haller. What have you to tell us about Paderewski?
When your country entered the war, it is with Paderewski's help that I organized and trained in the United States a Polish army.
Paderewski was instrumental in this?
Paderewski was the inspiration. He it was who dreamed of this, who fought for this, who declared
the necessity of an independent Polish army. An army capable of demonstrating to the whole world that our nation is heart and soul with the Allied powers is imperative. We must have a distinct core, for there is no better way of reaffirming the restoration of the Polish state than by permitting Poles to fight everywhere under our own national flag.
And this came to pass, General?
At Fort Niagara, New York, 22,000 Poles volunteered to join me with a German price on my head to train to fight for liberty. And to Paderewski we paid a tribute such as never in the history of the world has ever been paid to another civilian.
What do you mean by that, General Haller?
Each day when each Polish regiment gathered for the roll call,
yes,
the sergeant of each regiment called the name
Ignaz Jan Paderewski.
And from each regiment came the thundering chorus, "Here."
My name is Lord Balfour. I was Foreign Secretary of His Majesty's government when the war was won.
Please continue, Lord Balfour.
I called Paderewski to London after the victory, and I told him, "We all want an independent Poland, Mr. Paderewski."
I know.
But in my opinion, Poland is in a most unlucky position.
Please explain, Lord Balfour.
Your leaders are divided. As you know, His Majesty's government is not able to recognize your committee as the responsible Polish government. But neither do we recognize the present Polish government in Warsaw. Yet Poland must be properly represented at the peace conference.
So?
It is your task, Paderewski. I want you to go to Poland to unite Polish hearts.
I can still hear the greeting the people gave him when Paderewski set foot on liberated Polish soil on Christmas Day. Thousands upon thousands cheering him, acclaiming him. His face was wet with tears when I was able to reach him. I shouted, "Merry Christmas, Maestro!" And he said to me,
"Thank you, thank you. And a happy new year to you. A happy new year in the new Poland."
Thank you.
think it was easy for him, perhaps, uniting the different Polish factions.
Was it, Madame Paderewska?
It was most difficult. For a hero, too, was General Pilsudski, who had completely different ideas from my husband. Consider it. Two men with the same ambition, the same love for their country. Miles apart.
But the differences were worked out?
Finally. General Pilsudski became president of the new Poland.
And your husband?
Prime Minister, Foreign Secretary, and Poland's delegate to the peace conference.
Perhaps you'd be interested in how the other statesmen reacted to Paderewski at the peace conference at Versailles.
Very much so, Colonel House.
Lloyd George, who later came to admire him.
What can you expect from a country that sends as her representative a pianist?
Clemenceau, the so-called tiger of France.
Tell me, monsieur, how you cousin to the famous pianist Paderewski?
President Wilson.
I have not forgotten Premier Paderewski.
And yourself, what did you think, Colonel House?
This. His career, his work at Versailles, is such that deserves to be remembered not only by his own countrymen, but by every man to whom love of country and loyalty to a great cause stand forth as the noblest attributes of human character. But more even than that, Paderewski was one of the few at Paris who had a wider outlook than just his own country. He was for Europe as a whole, a Europe that could live in peace with itself. Many and constant were his proposals, looking to the safeguarding of the rights of minorities in the old and newly created states. Many of his recommendations, had they been accepted, would have brought a fuller and more lasting peace to the whole world.
I saw him at the end, on the day of the conclusion of the peace, June 28th.
Who are you?
I'm the one who called the statesmen of each country forward to sign the treaty.
Tell us about it.
The Galerie de Glace was packed. With their backs to the huge mirrors sat Clemenceau, Wilson, Lloyd George, and the others. When I called, "Let the Germans enter," they came. And 2,000 eyes followed them. They were the first to sign the treaty. Then I called upon delegate after delegate to take his turn to sign the document. Finally, I called his name.
Go on, please.
I remember he wore a long black morning coat, white waistcoat, and a white bow tie. I pointed to the place where he was to sign his name. Slowly, he took up his pen. He signed I. J. Paderewski. Small and neat, like notes of music. And no sooner had he done it than suddenly the whole room burst into ringing applause. I shall never forget the look in his eyes as he signed before all the first official international and general acknowledgement of an independent Polish state.
And there, my friends, you see why and how a pianist came to help shape with his artist's hands a nation that had ceased to exist for over 100 years. For Ignaz Jan Paderewski, who brought us music. For Ignaz Jan Paderewski, who helped us to understand our responsibilities as a free nation in a tortured world. For Ignaz Jan Paderewski, who, when he died in this country during World War II, we, out of respect, gave temporary haven in our own Arlington National Cemetery. For all this, to Poland, we say thank you.
The history, faith, and courage of men like Ignaz Jan Paderewski, we of today can draw strength to fight on and win the battle of peace on earth, goodwill to men. We cordially invite you to listen again, for this is the story. United States Armed Forces Radio Service, the voice of information and education.